You know, just some questions. Just maybe we can expand it, not just domestic policy and stuff, but just good old-fashioned civics questions, good old-fashioned social studies questions. We'll see how smart you guys are. If you want, 816-931-5534. That's 931-KKFI. We can do easy ones. We can do really hard ones. Who doesn't like to be quizzed? Throw one out there. Real, real easy. Maybe we'll make it a complex mathematical question as well. Oh, somebody's calling. We'll see what this is. Might need directions to knuckleheads. Let's check that out. KKFI, you're on the air. You're on the radio.
Hi there.
Good morning.
My name's Ben. I dig your show. You always make me think, and I appreciate it. I have a question for you.
Okay.
I don't know if we all know, but I sure agree with you in that the two-party system is an absolute fail, and I wondered if you have any suggestions for a healthier alternative.
Absolutely, I do. It's a minute after one right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. That simply put, the solution is this, my friend, is that anyone that ever tells you that you throw your vote away by voting for a third or a fourth or a fifth or a sixth or a seventh party is perpetuating the two-party system. If you can't get people to vote for other parties, then they're never going to get funding at the state level. You know, and if they don't have that funding, they don't have ballot access, they don't have anything that the Democrats and the Republicans walk into every election year right off the bat. And ballot access is an important one. When you poll, I think in the state of Missouri, it's 2% statewide. The next time there's an election, you have automatic ballot access. And if it's not 2%, it's something along those lines. But if you don't have that, to get statewide ballot access, you have to go petition. You have to go get people to sign a petition outside of grocery stores and strip malls and church organizations, all these other things, and then take them to the Secretary of State and have this stuff notarized and then get put on the ballot. I mean, that's just one thing right there. And without that automatic ability to access the polls, then third parties, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, they're never going to have a shot. And the second thing, and I don't have the ability to affect this, and you don't either as much as the first thing, but money needs to be removed from politics.
Absolutely. Citizens United is doing the absolute opposite of uniting us.
Well, right. And there's that other case, the wealthy business owner in Alabama or Mississippi or something like that, who wants to be able to, he feels like as an American citizen, he should be able to give unlimited cash contributions to political causes. I think we're still waiting for the Supreme Court to decide on that. I can't think of the gentleman's name who brought that lawsuit. Somebody from the South, though. I'm sure somebody in the audience knows that story and could tell us about it very much. But that's an important thing. Anytime anyone ever says that you're throwing your vote away, voting for, when you don't vote for a Democrat or a Republican is a fool, and you cannot throw your vote away in a Democratic system, in a republic. It's impossible to do.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I voted third party this last election. I voted for Gary Johnson, and obviously he did not win, but I am in hopes that at least at some point here in a future election they will get equivalent funding to what some of the major parties get, or even better, that it would be, the funding would be a level playing field in some way.
Well, and you're only going to be able to restrict the way money goes to the big parties. You're not going to be able to get that level of funding to these smaller parties unless you really do have some sort of, grassroots, true, from the bottom up movement. And, when it comes down to it, you need to get people elected on the county level, the local level. City of Kansas City is a nonpartisan election system, so that's not really going to give you what you're looking for. But you do need to get people at the county and the state level. If there are states that can have participation in their assemblies that is libertarian or green or whatever the party is, and then possibly you know, a governor or other members of, you know, the statewide government, secretaries of state, et cetera, who can be of that non-two-party system ilk. That's the step in the right direction. You're not going to win the presidential, general election without having a lot of statewide support across the 50 states.
Thank you. That makes a lot of sense, and I hadn't thought about that.
All right. You take care, my friend. You have a great day.
Thank you, too.
Oh, do you want to, hey, before you go, did you already go?
Oh, yeah, sure. What
no,
was that?
Do you want me to ask you a little civics question?
All right. I'm ready.
All right. So who is the Secretary of Defense?
You got me. I don't know.
Really? The former Nebraska senator? Who did he replace as Secretary of Defense? All right, Chuck Hagel is the correct answer. He is the current Secretary of Defense of the United States. Who did he succeed? Anybody? 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. We could ask constitutional questions. How old do you have to be a United States representative? What is the minimum age requirement of being a representative of the United States of America? 6 minutes after the hour of one, right here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City. We don't have to do a little Q&A. We don't have to. Just thought it'd be fun. 931-5534, 931-KKFI. If we were to do that, little question and answer. So, motive still unclear as details on Maryland shooting suspect emerges. I mean, I don't know that it's, you know, is it, because they say that these shootings have remained flat over the last couple of generations. The frequency of these mass shootings, even though, I mean, we're looking not necessarily at a mass shooting. I mean, it was three people, including the gunmen, died. And, you know, two innocent people lost their life. That is sad. That is a tragedy. One of the guys had a baby and had his own personal problems and had figured his life out. And now he's gone. But not necessarily a mass shooting, even by American standards. But they say statistically these mass shootings have not increased. There's not more of them than there were, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. But we just, I mean, it becomes, that was the only news story on the TV on Saturday, was the mass shooting in Columbia, Maryland. Of course, some conspiracy guys out there go crazy when stuff happens in places like Columbia, Maryland. 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI, you're on the radio.
Yes, I don't know the answer, but I'm interested in your trivia questions.
I know.
I won't get the answers, but go ahead and give it to me.
No, what do you think? How old do you have to be a United States representative?
A U.S. representative? 43.
Huh? 43? No, 25.
25, okay.
Yes, 25. That's absolutely right. Which constitutional amendment gives you freedom from unlawful search and seizure? Harold?
Oh, okay. I'm thinking. Which gives you freedom from, I'm not sure. I know they are always. Okay, two is the arm.
Yeah, it's the gun one. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not two. That's all good, Harold. That's all good. We'll continue answering and asking the questions as the night goes on.
Okay, keep going.
All right, take care. All right, we'll talk to you later, Harold. I'm not gonna. You got a call. You got a call, and you want to play ball, then we'll do it. Motive still unclear with the Columbia, Maryland shooting suspect. But in this New York Times article, I think kind of sums it up for all the paranoids out there. In the very last part of its article. Last year, Maryland passed sweeping restrictions on gun ownership, including a ban on new purchases of assault weapons and a 10-round limit on magazines. It was one of the several states to pass such a measure after the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut, where 26 children and educators died. But the new law would not affect the gunmen in Columbia, Maryland, at the mall, because Maryland does not regulate the sale of shotguns, which he used a 12-gauge Mossberg shotgun. No permit is required to buy one, because it was a shotgun, a weapon that has been around, has been ever present in American society for hundreds of years, is probably one of the cheapest guns you can buy. You can always buy shotgun ammunition, even last year. I don't know if, you know, last year after Sandy Hook happened, you know, this would, we're a month and a year out from the Sandy Hook shooting at that elementary school in Connecticut, which is, I don't, you know, it's a tragedy. I don't need to go all Black Ops Radio on that deal. I don't find it necessary right now. Because some of the real paranoids out there, the truly, I don't know if it's delusional. I don't know what it is. I'm not trying to be antagonistic or negative against people who want to be skeptical about the system, want to be skeptical about the way we perceive and the way we digest, you know, stories that happen. And there's a lot of reason, I think, to be skeptical about what we're told by the media, by the government, etc. I can understand that. I don't know that I need to go to the point where everyone that was involved in the Sandy Hook shooting was an actor and these people were faking their grief and their sadness, and all these children actually either had never lived or just, it gets pretty far out there, a little farther out there than I need to go. But now that we're a year and a month out from that, it used to be that you weren't able to buy any type of ammunition at all. It just wasn't available. But there was just too much demand and supply could not keep up. I don't know if that's still the case, but even when that was the case, shotgun shells always available. I mean, it's going to be a hard sell to outlaw shotguns. I don't think that will happen. But the last few lines of that New York Times article sums it up perfectly. Maryland passed restrictive gun laws, but it wouldn't have mattered in this case because the gun he was using, you don't need a permit for. You only have to be 18 to buy. And they're not regulated whatsoever. They call the FBI, find out if you're a felon. Move right along. Sell your gun. Have a nice day, Mr. Aguilar, or whatever this guy's name was. 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. You're on the radio.
Hey, what's happening? Just Paul. Paul Parks.
What's up, man?
You know, I'm still out there fighting AIDS, but I'm trying to get investors now to buy into it.
Okay. Well, good, man. I'm glad to hear that.
And no, I think some pharmaceutical company, they want the antidote.
The antidote to what, man?
For HIV.
Okay. You know, I mean, you could probably be all right on the AIDS thing if, who cares? I mean, okay. So the antidote to AIDS, you have it. You're making it in your basement right now. Are you selling it on Craigslist?
Well, not yet, but I'm trying to find an investor on there because I know that this one company, they want to buy it, but I got to have at least have enough money to negotiate a contract with a lawyer.
Yeah, well, all right.
But I do have the, so that's what I'm doing now. I'm trying to find some investors on now. So I'm going to hang up, and it's good hearing your voice, man. That was good hearing your voice.
All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that you're out there too, and good luck with your investors. Good luck. I mean, you're not going to find any listening to KKFI at 1:15 in the morning. Please help us. Help us. I mean, if I was making my own AIDS antidote in my basement, I would be selling that on Craigslist, folks. Hand over fist. I'd be selling it in the parking lots of McDonald's and Walmarts throughout the metropolitan area. Yep, you know, because AIDS is still a real thing for some people. I'm pretty sure the World Health Organization declared it to be a non-pandemic in North America, generally speaking, but it's still a concern. I mean, as all autoimmune issues should be a concern. It's all that AIDS is an autoimmune disease. Your immune system is constantly being attacked by all sorts of things. I mean, primarily by pharmaceutical drugs. And I guess some illegal drugs, too. One of the big things that, you know, always gets lost within AIDS is that a lot of AIDS in its early stages came from kind of the party culture, where a lot of drugs were used, drugs like cocaine. Cocaine destroys your immune system. If you don't have an immune system, you are constantly being barraged by viruses, bacterias, molds, all kinds of foreign allergens to your body constantly, all day long. All day, every day, you're getting sprayed with this crap. And if it wasn't for your immune system to be able to knock this stuff out, I mean, you would die. I mean, real quick. Real quick. I mean, this idea, these people walking around with their damn hand sanitizer. Good luck. I mean, really good luck. I don't know. Hand sanitizer is psychological. Not saying that, you know, you couldn't have like a little E. coli in your hands after using the restroom or something like that. And hey, you want to clean your hands, and if water's not available, I don't like having dirty hands either. But Jesus Christ. I mean, to think that you are even combating a small part of all the microbial, viral, mold spore realities that swirl around your body all day, every day. I don't care how clean your house is. I don't care how fresh the air is outside of your house. Man, it's dirty out there. That's all I'm saying. When you have a compromised immune system, you are susceptible to all of it. And that's all AIDS is. It destroys your immune system. That's all that it does. Having strong immune systems. I mean, what also destroys your immune system? Antibiotics, by destroying the flora and fauna of your digestive tract and creating imbalances within your body. I mean, that is your immune system. Your immune system is so heavily tied in implicit to your digestive system. Very important things. So watch out. Watch out for those. I don't know. I'm talking about AIDS. I don't know why. Because the gentleman with the AIDS antidote called. Thank you for calling again. 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI is the telephone number. You're welcome to call. Motive still unclear. Details on Maryland shooting suspect emerge. They don't know why he did it. They can't figure it out. Seemed like a nice guy, they said. He was a skater, a skateboarder. By that, I mean, I saw a skater. I was like, he's an ice skater? It's almost the Olympics. It's kind of on the mind there. Ice skating, okay. Oh, he was a skateboarder, and he targeted the skate shop in the mall, and they're not real clear if they knew the people he was talking. I mean, you would assume that he knew who you went there to kill, but why? It just doesn't. I mean, where is the sense here? And they'll paint a picture at some point. Find out this kid was taking, you know, prescription pills for depression or some sort of personality disorder, and he was really into video games. And I mean, it's just the same story day in, day out, over and over and over again, where we've created chemical and visual sociopaths. I mean, think about that. The sociopathic nature of controlling somebody's emotions and then desensitizing them to violence. Chemical and visual sociopaths. And it's been done for what reason? What reason has our society created this explosion of chemical and visual sociopaths. Money. Just money. Just want to sell drugs and sell video games. Both those things. Both pharmaceuticals and video games are very profitable. Creating visual and chemical sociopaths. One prescription at a time. All right. 20 minutes after the hour of one, I'm Benjamin. This is the Paragon Radio program. We are going to be right back after this this very brief song. I'm going to go get some more coffee here on Community Radio.
Bar-chicka. Bar-chicka. Got paid, beer drinker got played, sunglasses on the blackbird, barbecue is the new word, sleeping bag ain't no good, when you're lost in the hood, it's that West Texas dust, and that East Texas rust, baby.
Justin Bieber may get deported. To where? We don't know. We don't know where he may get deported. I'm hoping, got fingers crossed, Guantanamo Bay. Or maybe Camp X-Ray or Bagram Air Force Base or one of those spots. Deport him and then stick stuff in him. You know, maybe he needs to get the New Mexican Highway Patrol treatment where they get, you know, the triple enema threat and then they use their fingers and then a colonoscopy. Just for fun. You got nothing in you. They did a couple x-rays. They know you're clean. They just like to check. Not to, you know, for what? They know you got nothing. They just like to look. They like the process. Yeah, Justin Bieber might get deported, guys. And nobody knows to where, but we just know that he might get deported. But let's be honest here. I mean, who was the last Well, you know, might have been that, remember Snow, the informer? Remember Snow? Anybody out there? Anybody from the early 90s? He was a Canadian rapper. I think he got deported for something. I'm not sure what. Probably for having weak rhyming skills. If only he was a better lyricist, they may have let him stay. It was pretty famous that Richard Nixon wanted John Lennon to be deported. And John Lennon eventually was deported just from, you know, this life. He immigrated to a different plane of consciousness or something like that. Sad how that works. Because, you know what? Paul McCartney still roams free. Nobody's done anything to Paul McCartney. He's still alive and kicking. Oh, my God. And it got so bad. Do you know, and this is, I guess this is old news now. This was a benefit for Hurricane Sandy or something like that. Which is over a year ago. Maybe the benefit wasn't, but the hurricane was. But, I mean, do you believe Paul McCartney and Dave Grohl and Chris Novoselic, Dave and Chris being of Nirvana, got together and recorded music together? I was just, why? Why, Dave and Chris? I mean, Chris, you had just been unscathed. Nobody accused you of being a Foo Fighter, Chris, because you weren't one. And then there you are, you, Dave, and Paul. How disturbing was that? Really, really disturbing. So now that weed is legal in places like Washington State and Colorado, and it's being generally accepted as a method of treatment for all kinds of ailments and illnesses, state, nationwide. I'm just saying that the possibility of having medical marijuana in Kansas or Missouri has been bolstered by the legalization for recreational use in Colorado. Just proved to the Bubbas that there's no real concern, even though there was a story, a local woman who had gone to Colorado, I think sometime this month, I read this in the Star, who had bought a little bit of weed and she was bringing it back with her, and they got pulled over and, you know, Futbuck, Kansas, which is right off the turnpike. And they, you know, were, you know, tail light out or something. The cop ends up finding the marijuana on them. And it wasn't a lot. It was, I think, you know, we're dealing with much less than a pound or something, you know, a large amount. I mean, I think we're talking about some personal stash. Lady gets arrested. Lady's not given, I mean, she was, had gone to Colorado to purchase this marijuana because she did have seizures and was on a bunch of pharmaceuticals. But of course, you know, she gets arrested. You know, she's not taking her meds because they were in a pill box and they weren't in the appropriate pill container from the pharmacy, and it didn't have her name on it and the specific type of medication that it was supposed to be, etc. So they're denying her of her medicines, and she ends up having health issues that people who are addicted to their pharmaceuticals will have when they're taken off of them. She ended up dying, of course, in police custody. I mean, a frantic scene, according to the newspaper, of her sister or her companion she was traveling with, you know, trying to resuscitate her along with another person in the cell. I mean, all because they got caught. I mean, it's just the amazing thing. They crossed an imaginary state line, a political line, a line on a map. That was, I mean, if you want to look at an arbitrary state line, look at the one between Kansas and Colorado. The entire state of Colorado is completely arbitrarily, you know, devised. That and in Wyoming. I was doing a 50-state geography interactive thing with my oldest kid on the computer the other day. And he's like, we get to, it was either Wyoming or Colorado. And he just thought it was funny that that was even a state. It's like, that doesn't make any sense compared to the bizarre nature of all these other entities. But it's one of those things. She actually needed it. She went out there to get it. She crosses the imaginary state line. Police in Kansas find it on her, and they end up, through their negligence, killing her because they are not letting her take her meds because they're in a pill box and not in the pharmacy containers and the actual pill bottles. So they're accusing her of using, you know, her anti-seizure medication recreationally. Nothing like getting some of those anti-seizure pills and crunching them up and sticking them up your mucous membranes. Gross. But since you have, you know, this liberalization of policy, a complete liberalization of drug policy in regards to marijuana in Washington and Colorado and New York State, now they're, you know, just, you know, the governor there said that he is no longer interested in enforcing the criminalization of marijuana. Rick Perry, who nobody knows why we even pay attention, but Rick Perry was saying that he would like to see marijuana decriminalized in Texas too. But they're proposing legalizing medical marijuana in Illinois as well. But there are a lot of strings attached, disturbing strings attached, to how they would legalize medical marijuana in the state of Illinois. The new medical marijuana legalization bill requires Illinois citizens to undergo a background check, be fingerprinted, and pay a $150 fine for using marijuana for medical purposes. So it's essentially creating a situation where you have to, you know, be found guilty of something, and then you can proceed to use your medical marijuana. But on top of all that, and most disturbing of all, Illinois citizens will also be required to sign away their right to own a firearm in the application process. Personal liberty and responsibility has become a dead idea in the state of Illinois. Yeah, so if you want to have a little medical pot in Illinois, you have to give up your guns. People who want to treat themselves with something other than dangerous pharmaceutical drugs, I guess it's a trade-off, though. I mean, if you're going to go the kindler, gentler, more organic route, you probably, I mean, I don't know. The only thing you should be shotgunning is your medical marijuana certificate. The Department of Agriculture in Illinois would develop rules for the cultivation centers, and the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation will be employed to draw up rules for dispensaries. More and more power to the state. The plan also dictates the reasons for which caregivers can prescribe cannabis, outlining 41 specific medical conditions that pre-qualify patients to seek a patient registry medical marijuana ID card. Wow, the ID card will permit patients to access 2.5 ounces of medical marijuana every 2 weeks to be administered by a certified caregiver. I mean, that's more than a certified caregiver. If you're consuming 2.5 ounces of medical marijuana in a week, that person has to straight up be like a trainer, like a coach of some sort. I mean, that would be an incredibly difficult feat, or at least just a booster. I mean, this, of course, comes on the heels of another, you know, scientific study that says that one of the compounds found in marijuana just literally shuts off cancer. Because cancer is just a switch. You turn it on and off. Every time you cut yourself and you have to have a blood clot and then a little scab, that's cancer. It's just your body knows how to heal from that. It can heal that wound or not. And that's, I guess, the point here. Apparently, there's not just tourism to Colorado for medical marijuana, but now there are families that are moving there who have children with, I think, the number one medical condition that people are moving their entire families because they have a child with a medical condition, and the primary medical condition is seizures. And apparently, there is a strain of marijuana that they're calling Charlotte's Web that has a low enough amount of THC that it's almost considered hemp. I don't think it's considered, from what I can tell, from what I've read, I'm hardly an expert on this. They're saying that it would be considered hemp, the experts are saying that it would be considered mostly hemp, but apparently there's still a compound in this that, while it doesn't have the intoxicating effects of marijuana, it does provide significant seizure relief. And children as young as 3 are taking this, and they take it in an oil form, from what I understand. But people are literally moving to Colorado because they are at wit's end with the pharmaceutical and medical industry, trying to figure out how to manage, you know, their children's seizures, et cetera. And there's all kinds of new conditions that we seem to be creating every single year because of the nature of what we ingest and stick into little arms. So in Illinois, you can also potentially get medical marijuana sometime in the future as long as you sign away your Second Amendment rights. But which, of course, that is one of the ways, you know, anytime if you get arrested for drug possession and you also have firearms on you, and it gets really messy really quick. You get arrested for drug possession and you have, you know, cash money in your house, it gets very expensive really quick when all that gets seized. And I believe the authorities can seize just about anything in your possession if they are accusing you of profiting off of the sale of illegal drugs. Because just about everything they could argue in your house could have been purchased with the profits of your illegal drug business. That can get very, very expensive very, very quickly. Farmers are now abandoning GMO seeds, and the reason will surprise you. Well, maybe not. We've talked about this before, but to see this again, to see this becoming... Oh, hold on. Breaking news. Justin Bieber may get deported. We're not sure to where. I'm voting for Guantanamo Bay. Maybe Camp X-Ray. And, Anbar. I understand that a lot of people are leaving the Anbar province right now. Maybe we could turn those people into believers. But farmers abandoning GMO seeds... Reconverts to non-genetically modified orgasmic seeds are not hippies, but conservative Midwestern farmers who are making a business decision. Yes, it's coming down as a business decision. Apparently, a trade magazine that I wish I had a subscription to, Modern Farmer, discovered that they are switching back to natural seed because it is more profitable. Not because of any ideology. So they're not, you know, a bunch of pot-sucking hippies. 5 years ago, GMO seeds worked, said farmer Christ Hugerich. It's clearly a farmer from Minnesota, who along with his father planted GMO seeds. I didn't have corn rootworm because of the BT gene, and I used less pesticide. Now the worms are adjusting and the weeds are resistant. Mother Nature adapts. I mean, that's one of the big... side effects of all these genetically modified seeds, now that we're well over 15, 20 years into this process, into this GMO reality, is now that there are all kinds of super weeds, and we're not talking about medical marijuana anymore, but we're talking about plants that have become resistant, plants that you don't want in your farmland. A weed is a plant in the wrong place. I mean, some plants just don't belong anywhere, but... that's what they say. A weed is a plant in the wrong place. And you have these genetically modified organisms, so you can spray the plants that aren't supposed to be there and the plants that are supposed to be there, but you don't kill the plants that are supposed to be there because they have been modified to withstand being dosed with all kinds of nasty pesticides that kill other stuff. But now these weeds are just getting stronger and they can't kill them. Now, weeds are pretty amazing plants in the first place, the way they spring up overnight, the way they just dig deep, and they're just amazing tenacity, the voracious nature of how weeds grow. But between that and having bugs that are getting resistant to all these pesticides, Mother Nature does adapt, and it's probably going to be freakish what ends up happening. Farmers can get paid more for conventional corn than they can get for genetically modified corn. And the farmer discovered that conventional corn can produce more per acre. I mean, that's the true irony of all of this, is that just good old-fashioned corn, not genetically modified corn, has a higher yield. Modern Farmer, again, a trade magazine that I wish I had a subscription to, reported that 2 years ago, the same farmer planted 320 acres of conventional corn and 1,700 with GMO corn. The conventional fields yielded 15 to 30 more bushels per acre than the GMO fields, with a profit margin of up to $100 more per acre. So, I mean, it's a business decision because it was a bad model to begin with. And the only way Monsanto was able to be successful is through litigation and corporatism, because they've bought up all their competitors and they've sued anyone that's gone up against them. It's not, you know, the good old-fashioned American way, if you will. It's the new way of America, where it's more like, you know, like a con game, paying lawyers and, you know, buying out your enemies. A lot of concerns that people should have with genetically modified organisms. And unlike, you know, what was it, Argentina, I believe some of the farmers in Argentina have literally prevented the construction of a Monsanto seed gene facility, because people down there, I guess, are a little more connected. You don't see that as much up here. And it's hard to look at the scenes of what's going on in, you know, Ukraine right now, and the intensity of the conflict that's taking place right now in the Ukraine, and then look at America and go, well, man, if it wasn't for that dollar value menu at McDonald's, man, we might be out there too, dressed up like banditos holding broom handles and whatever else we could get our hands on, Molotov cocktails. But, you know, we can call Domino's and they'll have, you know, a medium pizza to us in no time at all. All right, so it's 20 minutes before the hour of 2, 816-931-5534. That's 931-KKFI. You can email me, paragonradio@gmail.com. paragonradio@gmail.com. Find the blog spot, paragonradio.blogspot.com. Working-age Americans are the majority of people on food stamps for the first time. I mean, think about that. That is literally corporate welfare. I mean, I'm sure a lot of these people who are on food stamps who are also working, work at places like Walmart's and McDonald's. It's really not hard to figure this out. For the first time ever, working age people now make up the majority of U.S. households that rely on food stamps. Food stamp participation since 1980 has grown the fastest among workers with some college training since 1980. People in the workforce who have gone to college are now the fastest growing segment of the food stamp recipient demographic. By education, about 28% of food stamp households are headed by a person with at least some college training, up from 8% in 1980. So in 1980, only 8% of households who were on food stamps had a member of the household who had gone to college, head of the household. I guess that's what that actually said. Now it's 28%, 20% increase. But just think about, I mean, the amazing thing, you couple those two things. In 1980, I think the Dow Jones Industrials, the entire volume of the Dow Jones was like 1,700. I think, you know, before last week, it was over 16,000. I mean, literally a tenfold increase. But that's not real economy. The paper economy. That's the Wall Street CIA economy. So, oh, breaking news. This just in. Could Justin Bieber get deported? Doves released in the Vatican are immediately attacked by other birds, and not necessarily birds, predatory birds either. So the Pope, who everyone loves, is tossing birds out the window of one of the buildings at the Vatican. Doves are a symbol of peace. They're tossing them out the window to signify their alliance with the people of the Ukraine, hoping they can figure it out. The Pope's tossing these birdies out with a couple of young girls. And then they get attacked by a crow and a seagull. They're right in front of thousands of onlookers. Some of the feathers got ruffled. Some of them got ripped out. But the doves managed to escape. But I don't know if that is a metaphor for something. I don't know if that actually means something. But it's just, it's one of those cute little side notes. It's like when Washington, D.C. was swarmed with a plague of locusts years ago. I just thought, you know, it's just one of those things. It just seems, I don't know if it's ironic or just a quinky dink.
I think it's a function of where that window is. I first came across that as a still picture on the internet, so I wanted to see if there's any accompanying video. Typed, white dove attack Pope into Google, hit videos, and this has happened frequently. I found like three other times on three separate occasions.
So it's not really special.
No, it's a stupid spot with lots of birds that probably fight for territory, and every time you introduce a brand new one, the alpha birds of other flocks.
Birds of prey are quite amazing. I mean, watching a hawk, you know, which is probably the largest bird of prey. I mean, you see an owl from time to time. I've never seen an owl eat something, though, because they eat at night.
Right.
I mean, owls are super intense birds. I mean, when you see one, it's a powerful totem, you know, to watch, animalistic totem to see. But watching a red-tailed hawk, which is something you're going to see a lot of in Kansas City, going after something like a squirrel or your neighbor's yappy dog, I mean, is a sight to behold. It really is. Now watching a seagull fight with a dove outside of the Vatican over a sardine or something, I don't know. I know that's not something I really want to see. But so much for solidarity with the people of Ukraine. So this is an interesting story. We've talked a little bit about this since we were talking about this last week. There was this thing that existed on the deep internet for years, and I didn't know about it until it was completely shut down. It was called the Silk Road. They say there's a Silk Road 2.0 or something along those lines that has been started, but I can't figure out how to even get on the damn thing. Because you need to use the Tor, the Onion router. You need to do this and that, you know. And I'm a simple guy when it comes to the internet. There's buttons, I press them.
Right. You know? You have to have a silk scarf too.
Do you?
To be accompanied with your Silk Road.
I thought you needed a camel or something.
Silk boxers. That was it.
But the Silk Road was based upon the Bitcoin, and the Bitcoin is a digital peer-to-peer currency. People call it the Napster of finance, the Napster of money. This idea that you can have a way to trade value, a way to trade money that is not controlled by a government or a central bank, is very enticing to the, you know, libertarian hacker mindset, which is very much so anti-establishment. But this is an interesting take on Bitcoins that is so painfully obvious that I didn't even realize. Bitcoin enthusiasts like to present it as power to the people, stressing its apparent lack of ownership. And they stress the lack of a need for a trusted party like a bank or a broker to verify that a payment has been made, and many clearly relish the idea of launching a currency outside the control of central banks. If you believe this hype, you've been had. As Isabella Kaminska of the Financial Times tells us, you all are really just doing free, underpaid R&D for central banks. R&D being research and development. Since you are debugging and building legitimacy for one of their fond projects, making currencies digital and getting rid of cash altogether. I'd wondered about the complacency of the Fed and the SEC officials in Senate Banking Committee hearings on the Bitcoin last year. Press reports at the time attributed it to successful lobbying. But there's no need to fight when you understand how to become the alpha quant per Tom Lehrer. Then it goes, well, plagiarize. Let no one else's work evade your eyes. Remember why the good Lord made your eyes. Don't shade your eyes. But plagiarize, plagiarize, plagiarize. Only be sure to call it, please, research. Central bankers, after all, have had an explicit interest in introducing e-money from the moment the global financial crisis began. Bitcoin has helped to destigmatize the concept of a cashless society by generating the perception that digital cash can be as private and anonymous as good old-fashioned banknotes. It's also provided a useful test run of digital systems that can now be adopted universally by almost any pre-existing value system. This is important because in the current economic climate, the introduction of a cashless society empowers central banks greatly. A cashless society, after all, not only makes things like negative interest rates possible, it transfers absolute control of the money supply to the central bank, mostly by turning it into a universal banker that competes directly with private banks for public deposits. All digital deposits become base money. Consequently, anyone who believes Bitcoin is a threat to fiat currency misunderstands the economic context. Above all, they fail to understand that had central banks had the means to deploy e-money earlier on, the crisis could have been much more successfully dealt with. Among the key factors that prevented them from doing so were the very probable public hostility to any attempt to ban outright cash, the difficulty of implementing and explaining such a transition to the public, and the inability to test run the system before it was deployed. Last and not least, they would have been concerned about displacing conventional banks from their traditional deposit-taking role, and in doing so, inadvertently worsening the liquidity crisis and financial panic before improving it. Almost all these prohibitive factors have, however, by now been overcome. Digital currency now follows in the footsteps of a disruptive anti-establishment digital movement perceived to be highly accommodating to the black market and all those who would ordinarily have feared an outright cash ban. This makes it exponentially easier to roll out. Bitcoin has done the bulk of educating. What was once viewed as a potentially oppressive government conspiracy to rid the public of its privacy can be communicated as being progressive and innovative as a result. Banks have been given more than 5 years to prove their economic worth and have failed to do so. If they haven't done so by now, they probably never will, meaning there's unlikely to be huge economic penalties associated with undermining them on the deposit front or in transforming them slowly into fully funded fund managers. The open ledger system, which solves the digital double spending problem, has been robustly tested. Flaws, weaknesses, and bugs have been understood, accounted for, and resolved. The balance of the article describes how the central bank digital currency would be launched, and the author finds a plan developed by Miles Kimball of the University of Michigan to be thorough and viable. Oh, and why would Bitcoin central bank digital currency make it viable to implement negative interest rates? The greater the negative interest rate, the greater the incentive to hold alternative coins. The greater the incentive to hold alternative coins, the greater the incentive to produce them. The greater the incentive to produce them, the greater the chances of oversupply and collapse. The more sizable the collapse, the more desirable the managed official e-money system ultimately becomes in comparison. Either way, the key point with official e-money is that hoarding incentives, which would be generated by negative interest rate policy, can in this way be directed to private asset markets, which are not state guaranteed and thus not safe for investors, rather than to state-guaranteed banknotes, which are guaranteed and preferable to anything negative-yielding or risky. So all these tales by Silicon Valley promoters of how liberating and democratic Bitcoin will be are almost certain to prove to be precisely the reverse. Hang on to your real-world wallet. That's very interesting, though, and it is so incredibly obvious that Bitcoin is just a little foreplay for a straight-up cashless society. But then at the same time, I don't know that you could have a cashless society. I mean, how much of our society is benefited by black markets? I mean, how much cash money is created through black markets, through drug markets, human trafficking? You know, illegal transactions of weaponry. I mean, I don't know. It seems like you would do a great disservice to the black markets of the United States of America. I mean, I guess we got Foursquare, though, right? I mean, you don't need to have cash. You just need to be able to, swipe your card. PayPal. Maybe we could just start using our PayPal accounts. That's really going to make it difficult for people to buy $5 rocks. You know, is really what that's going to come down to. All right, it's about a couple minutes before the hour of 2 right here on Community Radio in the 21st Century. Play a couple of things, and we'll be right back with you on Community Radio in the 21st Century.
Ed Peterson is a Johnson County Commissioner and an environmentalist. He'll be Craig Lubow's guest on Echo Radio KC, Monday at 6 p.m.
Hello, I'm Kathy Peters, president of KKFI's Board of Directors, asking you for your support of local and vocal radio. Among the many adjectives I use to describe KKFI are local and vocal, two words that rhyme for a reason. KKFI is a homegrown product, volunteer-driven and nurtured locally by donors like you. And KKFI is vocal, giving full-throated voice to news, views, and issues that may run counter to the homogenous sound bites promulgated by the commercial media. For more than 25 years now, KKFI has given thousands of local musicians an audience, airing some of the best local talent around. KKFI gave them a shot when nobody else would. Now we're calling on you. You may have received a letter from me. Please let your voice be heard by sending a tax-deductible pledge of support for local and vocal radio, or go online to kkfi.org to our secure website. Either way, I hope to hear from you soon, and thank you.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.